Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie and see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good. Very, very busy week this week. It's that crazy time of year for me, as I'm sure you can imagine. And how about you? How are you doing this week?
Yeah, not too bad.
Anything you want to share with our listeners?
Well, yeah, actually, I was wondering if I could just talk
about... And anyway, we'll go on to the emails. Thanks very much. We haven't had an email. We have had a message through our social media from Johnny. So thanks very much, Johnny, for your message. And we think Johnny's asked us a question. We can't be sure. But we think Johnny's asked us, what is our favourite recurring joke or segment in a movie? Do you want to take that one?
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of good ones. I think the comedic ones are the best ones, really. I don't know. I feel like I was watching something the other day that I thought, these are some really good recurring jokes. But I can't remember what it was. Oh, yeah. I was watching Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And it's the joke where they say, did that look cool? And I just think it's really funny how it keeps on coming back.
Okay. I don't know that one. I wonder, is there a better running joke in all of movies than this one? I think you'll know it when you hear it. Surely you can't be serious.
Please don't call me Shirley. I think I butchered it, but...
is that the best running joke in any movie of all time ever?
That is a great movie, but I think it probably is, yeah.
And so many of those things as well. I've got to get these people to a hospital. Oh my goodness, what is it? It's a big building with patients right now, but that's not important. So maybe that's the best recurring joke in a movie. The other one I was thinking of when I read the question was, and you'll get this one straight away if I just say it, that still only counts as one.
Yeah, that is a good joke, yeah.
Thank you very much, Johnny, for your message and your question. And do keep them coming. You can get us via email, thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you prefer, you can get us through Twitter and just search for us on The Benefit of Hindsight and you'll find us there. And yeah, thank you very much. We really enjoy all the messages. That's a really good question, Johnny. And surely we're not going to get a better question than that, Sam.
We might do, but please don't call me Shirley.
Okay, I won't call you Shirley. Whenever Sam sends me the link to do this recording, there's always a little joke in the link, and I thought this was my favourite one so far. I just wanted to say that before we start talking about the movie. So the little link to this one was Podzilla, and the reason why I thought that was good was because I was hoping that that would be the one that you would use.
Nice. I almost put Podzilla and then in brackets too easy, because it was the obvious one.
It's brilliant. So welcome to our podcast on Podzilla, or as we like to call it, the Benefit of Hindsight podcast. And this week, Sam and I have been away and we have watched Godzilla 2014. And I'm going to ask you a question. Can I begin with asking you a question about Godzilla? Because you are, I think, a bona fide Godzilla fan, correct?
I'm not quite as queued up as everyone else is with it, but I do enjoy a good Godzilla, yeah.
Okay, and you've seen the most recent Godzilla movie, which I haven't seen.
Yeah, I've seen Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, and Godzilla Minus One as the most recent ones, yeah.
Okay, and nerd. How does this... he is, honestly. He's cool, though. So how does this Godzilla compare to those ones, in your opinion, as somebody who's seen more than one Godzilla?
Yeah, I think... they're very different films. So firstly, Godzilla X Kong is obviously a continuation of the Godzilla from 2014. And I think they've definitely adapted story-wise and character-wise, and I would say as an improvement. I would even say that I prefer Godzilla King of the Monsters, which is the sequel to Godzilla, a better film than Godzilla. So I don't know how much I want to compare the all three of them because they are very different films in their own subject. But I think that with Godzilla from 2014 and Godzilla Minus One, there's a very clear difference between who's making it and what the story is, because Godzilla kind of becomes an action hero in the MonsterVerse, whereas Godzilla Minus One is very much still sort of the Japanese horror kind of is a monster. And I quite like that. So I think they are similar in a lot of ways, but I don't know if I would call them comparable.
I need to see Godzilla Minus One,
You do, yeah.
because I think I'd like to see a comparison. I'm going to go straight out to bat here and say a thing which I think I've said before in this podcast, but I'm going to say with more passion this time. And that is, I genuinely did struggle with this movie. I didn't enjoy it. I don't know whether
Right.
that's a kind of precursor for the rest of the conversation, but I just had so many issues with it that I don't even know where to start. Do you want to do you
Yeah.
have do first of all, do you have any issues with it? Let's see if we agree at some point on any of these issues.
The thing is, we haven't had a conversation about this prior to this episode, to recording this episode. And I think I do agree with you, and I can see where you're coming from with the issues. There's a few things that I want to pick out on as negatives for this film, but I didn't want to come across as too negative either, so I'm hoping I can sandwich the negatives between the positives in a way. But I think I completely see where you're coming from before you've even said what the problems are.
So I wonder then if you can give me a positive. Let's see if there's a positive that you know that I've missed.
See, it depends how you think of what a positive would be for it, because they're very much opinionated in what I would say. So, like, the first one that I really wanted to mention was that the music. I really liked the music, and I thought it was quite unique and different from sort of the main Godzilla, the original Godzilla, and that music's kind of carried on later on in the franchise and even in Minus One. So I do think that, but I don't know if that's the positive that you're after.
It's definitely a thing that I would talk about, the music, because the soundtrack is by Alexandre Desplat. I don't know if I've said that wrong, but you know and he is responsible for one of my favorite soundtracks of all time ever.
Is it Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part One?
It is not. It's actually the it's actually The Imitation Game. I don't know if you've seen that movie. We definitely have to
Okay.
sing it together. Which I think is just one of the best soundtracks of all time, and I kept and so I saw oh this is Alexandre Desplat. It's probably Desplat or something, but and we're going to get many emails about the splat. But I was quite looking forward to the music because I thought, okay, I really like this guy. He writes good movie music, and I didn't notice it. Didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, it's. I think it's not obvious, but there's like bits that I do like, where it sounds like a bit of an operatic sort of thing when Godzilla turns up or the skydiving, but it's not like hugely notable, I would say. I just liked it because it felt unique for the piece.
Okay, so there's a positive that I've inadvertently turned into a negative. So let's go with the positive negative sandwich. So let's go for a negative from the movie. What would be one of your negative takes, as it were?
This is something that I'm kind of hoping we agree on, and I think we might agree on it, is that they shouldn't have killed Bryan Cranston's character. I think he, as an actor like him, he should have stayed in the film a lot longer, and I think that is a criticism of a lot of people as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's a decent actor, with in this particular instance, not a lot to work with, but he was given it his all. And you as a person watching an actor, all you really want to see is that they're committed to what they're doing, and then they just killed him, and that was it. And I just want to say, it didn't serve any purpose to the story that they killed him. It makes sense when they kill his wife and the young boy Ford's mother. That makes sense. There's a thing there. There's a Bambi syndrome there. You feel bad for him immediately. It just made no sense that they killed him. Ford didn't seem to even notice.
That's true, actually. Yeah, I think in a way as well, though, to oppose that is if he'd stayed alive, what role does he really serve? Because you end up following Ford anyway, because it's the whole sort of military background, was the only one who can deal with the bomb, that kind of thing. But I think there is a role somewhere for Bryan Cranston where he could have been with Serizawa, that kind of thing. But I don't know how far it would have gone.
My counterpoint to your question, it's a very good point that you've just made, but my counterpoint to that question is, okay, if he doesn't die, then you have to find a role to him to for him to serve and whatever he's going to do. But my counter to that question is, what is the point of his death?
See, watching it this time around, I kind of noticed some weird mirroring going on. And I think that kind of helped in a way. Because you kind of see, I don't know how best to describe this, but for example, Joe Brody's character, when he goes back to the house in Japan, and he's like, "Oh, I don't actually have a picture of your mum." And then he finds the picture, and it's this sort of heartfelt moment of, "Oh, that's what she looked like. This is a nice memory to have." And then very later on in the film, when everything's kicking off with Godzilla, Ford looks at a picture of his son and his wife. And I think it sort of drills home the idea that he's tried to be different from his dad in a way, and it marries those ideas together. I could probably explain this a lot better, but I don't know. I've lost the
Interestingly,
point.
no. Interestingly, the character, the actor Bryan Cranston, he gave his opinion in 2015, and I can't source this. I just read it somewhere that he felt that it was a narrative mistake to kill off his character. So even the actor playing Joe Brody thought that it was a mistake to kill him off. I just didn't see what particular point that it served to the movie.
I think the purpose of his character is to motivate Ford to go ahead and do this and try and. Because he ends up listening to him and believing his dad and thinking, oh, there is actually something at stake here. And he wants to protect his family like his dad is trying to do as well. So I think that is kind of his role in a way. I think it could have been done better. It's almost like a mentor where he's following in the footsteps to try and keep things right and get the answers and solve the problem. But I don't know if they needed to kill him off to do that, really.
I'd buy that if you're putting the script together. If you imagine it from a script writing point of view, you're the writer of the movie and you're thinking, you know, we need to motivate Ford to do what he does. Ford has his own family to protect. He doesn't want what's happened to his family to happen to his own family. And therefore, he has to become an orphan. And so he doesn't want that for his own child. Hence, he's motivated. I can kind of see that as a narrative point. But like a lot of these things, and we've mentioned this before in the podcast, if you have to search for the narrative point, it may have missed the point that it's trying to make.
Yeah, true.
I did have an issue with the name Ford. No one's called Ford in real life.
Yeah, I also have the exact same issue. It just felt weird. It felt more like a surname.
It's just like, it's like a movie name, Ford. No one's called Ford in real life. But I always do make the point that in a movie about a big monster chasing two small monsters, little things like that shouldn't really matter. But it really bothered me that he was called Ford. It's just not, because it's not a real name. You may as well have called him Mercedes.
Yeah, or just guy.
But just you know, it could have been called anything, but it just felt like such a Hollywood movie name. But there must be another positive we can pick out of Godzilla.
Well, I don't know if this goes against every point that I've just made, but I do like the characters in this film. I think it is slightly a negative though, because it's supposed to be a film about Godzilla and giant monsters, and to then focus on the characters sometimes is a bit much. But I do think though he was kind of compelling enough, Ford as a character, to keep going. But then maybe not enough. I don't know. And I do think all the thing this. Things with Serizawa and his crew and everything like that, and then the soldiers. It worked in a way of this is the first film where they don't really understand Godzilla's motives. So that worked as a character thing. Later on, if it had that sort of those same characters with those same motivations, I don't think it would work quite as effectively.
I would agree with everything you said there. One of the things about the film is Gareth Edwards as the director. Have you seen the film Monsters by Gareth Edwards?
I've seen some of it. It's a very interesting story.
Yeah, and it's very low budget and very character driven and things. And I think that because of the success of that movie, he gets the big chair on Godzilla. And he does bring a director's eye, a filmmaker's eye to what could essentially just be a massive fight between monsters on the streets of San Francisco. And I think part of that is the character development. But again, you know, the characters are so, I dare to say it, but they're so cliched. Okay, this just, you know, that you've got the heroic soldier, his wife, who just happens to be a doctor, at home looking after perfect child, and they're the perfect looking couple, and it's just like, it's just okay. You want to embed your movie in real life and say what would really happen if this happened, and you do so in a way with Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah, because she's on the ground with it. Yeah, when it happens, is that not just describing Cloverfield though?
Probably a little bit. We have to reference Cloverfield in this because even the monster, even the Muto monsters, look a bit Cloverfieldish, don't they?
Yeah. So I mentioned in the last podcast that there was this whole thing around me seeing that film, and I was really nervous. And I remember one of the things coming out of it was what you said was I was a bit worried about you, because they kind of, the Mutos look a bit like Cloverfield, and I was like, oh yeah, so they do. And every time I've watched Godzilla 2014 since, I've kind of just automatically hated them because they do have that sort of movement and physique of it all.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
There's definitely some Cloverfield. I think ultimately Cloverfield's a better movie, but we might disagree on that.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely disagree on that one. Although this did kind of make me maybe want to watch it, but I don't know.
I was curious to go back to Cloverfield, but I won't watch it until we agree to watch it. And then we could do a live rewatch of Cloverfield. That's what we should do for episode 50, a live rewatch of Cloverfield.
Would anyone watch us watch it, though?
Nah, probably not. Okay, I'm gonna do two more big issues that I had with the movie, and I'm gonna hand over to you. Okay, so my two big issues are these. Number one, Godzilla is a Japanese invention. Okay, it's deeply rooted in the Japanese culture, and I think the Japanese understand how to do Godzilla better than anybody else in the world. I'm basing that purely on, not really any evidence, but just a feeling. And I was very bothered by Team America, World Police, leading the charge and saying all those ridiculous Team America, World Police, Army things. He's 10 clicks away, and just really, really dreadful dialogue like that. So that was number one thing that bothered me. And the number two thing that bothered me was, this is probably a little bit, I don't know if it's controversial, maybe I've just been read too much into it, but around about the time of this movie and kind of in the news was the tsunami and the big Japanese nuclear station that went pop that caused another tsunami. And I felt like they were referencing those things in the movie and presumably correctly so, trying to create in our minds this idea that maybe the tsunami in Japan had been as a result of a giant monster. And I just wondered how appropriate that was. I mean, people actually died in those events. 250,000 people died in the big one in 2003. And I just thought, yeah, that's a bit of a cheap shot to then reference all these kind of major disasters for the purposes of your movie. Have I read too much into it there?
It's possible, but then again, there was all sorts of things done around 9/11. Like they had to reshoot some of Spider-Man and things like that, so I can see where you're coming from again. It does make a lot of sense.
I just felt like they were taking something, and that's great if you like that kind of thing. I know I love a good conspiracy theory, and so, you know, out there is the conspiracy theory that actually the big tsunami and the nuclear power station that went pop in Japan might be because of a giant monster. Of course, that's not true. And I just thought referencing it was, I don't know, I felt that I think the best word to describe it might be inappropriate. But, you know, it's just a movie and maybe I saw or read too much into it.
But there was a few things recently that were very similar to that, where some people said, oh, Japan might actually have a monster. Who knows?
Maybe it does.
Not that we're aware of, anyway.
Maybe the big conspiracy theory is that Godzilla's actually a real thing.
And they've been trying to warn us this whole time.
Absolutely.
By making big-budget movies.
Big-budget movies, yeah. And we just have ignored them because they keep throwing in people from Marvel movies and Breaking Bad. And so therefore we don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the cast. What did you make of the cast in the movie?
I didn't make much of them, to be honest, because they are just sort of the big faces of these other movies. And I think the direction you're wanting to go with this sort of thing, if you just pick the big famous actors, then, I don't know, it's not that you're not trying, but it's just driven by star power at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I felt that Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Bryan Cranston and all the things doing, I thought they did a perfectly good job. Within the context of what they were doing. There was one of my favourite actresses in there, actually. I don't think we've ever talked about this. Her name is Sally Hawkins. Do you know Sally Hawkins?
I do, yeah. Not personally.
Well, she speaks very highly of you. I love Sally Hawkins. I love everything that she does. And I thought, oh, look, there's a proper actor. And she was just woefully underused. Actually, she disappears about halfway through the movie. 1 minute she's in it, and the next minute she's just gone. And she plays a monarch scientist, I think the name is Dr. Graham or something. And she's great in it, and then she just disappears.
Spoilers for other MonsterVerse films, but there's a weird trend with these that I've noticed, and it's only started to die out a little bit, and that's that every character that returns in the sequel dies. So unfortunately, her character gets killed off in like the first half an hour of the second movie. I don't know if you
there
knew that.
You
spoilers.
I didn't know that. Oh no, what a disaster.
She gets eaten by the bad guy.
You see, there you go. There's another reason to not like this movie. They take the best actress in it. She disappears halfway through, and then the next movie, they just eat her.
It's just the way it goes.
Did you know that Godzilla is actually played by a person?
It's Andy Serkis, isn't it?
It's not Andy Serkis. It's not Andy Serkis. You would think that it was, but it isn't Andy Serkis. It's a guy called TJ Storm, and he's a stunt artist, but he's done lots and lots of other mocap work, as they call it. So TJ Storm is in the following movies. He's in Godzilla more than once, Deadpool, Captain America Civil War, Tron Legacy, and has never really appeared on camera.
I don't think I've ever seen Godzilla in any of those movies, though. Is it just a cameo?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yes, you might see him. You've not seen him in Deadpool. He's just in the background.
Oh, is that what that is? I always just thought it was a big building.
Just want to ask you another question about the movie. Am I right in thinking that when this movie first came out, it was in 3D?
Yes, I think it was. I think I saw something in the trivia as well about that.
Okay, interesting. I didn't remember it being in 3D. That's why.
I don't think we saw it in 3D.
No, I don't have a particular memory of seeing it in 3D. I did want to have a rant about, and I've ranted a lot in this episode, but I did want to have a rant about what I describe as movie conveniences. Did you see that coming?
Yeah, I thought you were going to mention that, actually, yeah.
So the son of the guy who goes all the way to Japan, just happens to be in the army. His whole job is defusing bombs. At a time when they need a person that can defuse bombs, he's gone back to San Francisco, which is where his wife, who just happens to be a doctor, lives with the perfect child. And it just so happens that Godzilla is on his way back to San Francisco, and therefore they have just the man for the job, who's suddenly accepted into this crack team of army soldiers and whatever as the guy that's going to go and defuse the bomb. And then two things. One, am I right in thinking they don't defuse the bomb anyway?
Yep, which is something I forgot about as well.
Okay, so the classic timer, it doesn't go off. Now, that could be a creative choice, and if it is, genius. And if it isn't, oh dear. And then the other bit is, so at the end of the movie when, you know, millions of people have been killed in San Francisco, the city's in ruins, he walks into the stadium and he's looking for his wife. Oh, there they are. There they are. They're just there. Brilliant. Okay, problem solved. Meanwhile, everybody else is looking at photographs on a wall and weeping and wailing, but that's all right, there she is. So problem solved. And just so many little movie conveniences in it. And then the whole, we've got to get this bomb to go off. Oh, no, don't let the bomb go off. Don't let, oh, it's just gone off. And it didn't do anything. It didn't cause any damage either. So we're going to kill everybody in this city. No, it's fine.
Because they also said it was like a really big bomb compared to like when they first tried to kill Godzilla with it. So like, why didn't it have an effect? And does Godzilla just then go off into the sea and just eat it all, drain it all?
It's 10,000 times stronger than Hiroshima. No, it isn't. It isn't. It's just gone. So presumably, maybe somewhere, maybe we've both missed this. Maybe someone can help us out. Is Godzilla in the sea when the bomb goes off thinking, oh, dinner time, and just eats all the radiation?
What if it's like, what if he was always going to stay in San Francisco and then was like, oh, actually, there's an excuse to leave. Maybe that was it.
Maybe he's going to stay in San Francisco and buy a little red t-shirt, not calling everybody babe. He's putting a bit of weight. He's let himself go a bit. So he's just going to stay and work out a little bit on the beach and things. I don't know. Anyway, full of movie conveniences. That's what I thought. Let's talk about the box office as we always do. It was predicted. Did you know this? It was predicted to be a massive flop by Forbes. A business magazine said it would almost certainly be the biggest box office bomb of 2014, saying it would need to make $380 million worldwide just to break even. And it actually made, bottom line is, it made a profit of $90 million. So it didn't make a massive amount of money, but then it sort of cut even. And people were pretty happy. So it had a $529 million total gross. So that's a lot of money, right? And then the estimate is that it made 92.3 million. So interesting. I thought it might have been more than that. But it's also true that Godzilla had been considered box office death, especially after the 1998 debacle, which had lost a lot of money.
I think that's probably why. Although the newest one is the highest grossing MonsterVerse movie now. It just passed that the other day.
Okay. Wow, I didn't know that. There we go. So it wasn't a massive financial success, but it was also a reasonably well-received movie by the critics, who generally speaking said it was pretty decent, you know, 3-4 stars, that kind of thing, and said it made up for the debacle of the 1998 Godzilla. Have you seen the 1998 Godzilla?
I don't think I have. I've seen bits and pieces, but I've kind of always avoided it because I know it's bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what were your memories of watching this movie? We were talking about whether or not we should reference this, but let's do it anyway, because this is, I think, in terms of our, how would you say this? So you and I went to the cinema together from your age of 2 or 3 up until the point where, I don't know how you would describe it, but things that father and son do together sort of gradually die out, maybe. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think for a lot of the films later, I think I went and saw them with friends a lot more.
You were closer to 18 when this movie came out, and so, you know, this is actually the last film that Dean and Sam, in the way that we're describing, went to the cinema to watch together. So I just wonder what the experience, your memory of it, of going to the cinema with me was to watch it.
Yeah, I think I kind of touched upon this briefly in the last episode, and I kind of wanted to talk about it a bit more. And it was that the idea of going to see a giant monster movie in the cinema again, or not just in the cinema, because we watched Cloverfield at home, was terrifying to me. Just sat in the dark and the loud to see a giant monster movie. And I remember being absolutely terrified out of my mind for doing it. But I don't know, I didn't say anything. I just sort of went along with it, tried to play it cool. And I think that was definitely a different experience from how I've watched this one and later ones as it's gone on. But no, I was terrified. And I think this is a funny anecdote, and I don't even know where it really came from. But I decided to go to the loo during the film, which didn't happen very often, to be fair.
No, it did not, no.
I don't know if it was just I actually needed to go, or if I just needed to get out because it's a loud movie with scary monsters. And I remember sort of walking out of the cinema, the auditorium sort of thing, look like acting like I was properly cool and chill about it all, but deep down I was terrified. But I don't know, I think I overall enjoyed the experience, and I'm glad I did see it in the cinema just to say that I have, especially because later on it helped conquer the whole fear, I suppose, if that's what it is. But I think in terms of the podcast being the benefit of hindsight, looking back on it, this is a completely different experience watching it again.
Yeah, I think it's, the universe is cruel sometimes, isn't it? I mean, you and I went to the movies together for 15 years. We watched countless movies, some amazing, brilliant things, some magnificent experiences. And the final, the sort of climax of that experience was 2014 Godzilla. You were terrified. And I genuinely couldn't remember it when we were talking about it last week. I couldn't remember anything about it. It's really interesting how real life sort of just peters out rather than explodes in a giant climax. It's quite sad, really, isn't it? We get quite reflective and sad for a bit there, I guess. Never mind.
And now, get ready for today's sponsor.
Get ready to unleash the power within. With our brand new energy drink that will make you feel like a true monster. Introducing Godzilla Energy Drinks. Are you tired of feeling sluggish and weak? Need a boost to conquer your day? Look no further. Godzilla Energy Drinks are here to save the day. Are you feeling like you're stuck in the city, battling through the concrete jungle? Godzilla Energy Drinks will give you the strength to rise above and conquer any challenge that comes your way. With our secret formula, packed with electrifying ingredients, you'll experience a surge of power that will make you feel like the king of monsters. Whether you're crushing your workout, dancing the night away, or simply need a pick-me-up during a long day, Godzilla Energy Drinks will keep you going strong. And the best part? Godzilla Energy Drinks come in a variety of flavors, so you can choose the one that suits your taste buds. Mothra Mango, Ghidorah Grape, Muto Melon, Atomic Breath Apple, Kong Banana, Raspberry Rodan, and Orange. So what are you waiting for? Unleash the beast within and grab your very own Godzilla Energy Drink today. Remember, when you need a boost of energy that's out of this world, reach for Godzilla Energy Drinks.
So do you have any out-of-pocket takes for Godzilla? I'm sure you do. I'm very excited to hear them.
I do. And this one kind of comes with a bit of trivia itself. Not to say that my out-of-pocket take is fake. So there's kind of like conflicting numbers for this, I'll say, in the lead-up to it, is that even though the film is titled Godzilla and he should be the main character, he doesn't appear until about nearly an hour in, and he's only seen on screen for 11 minutes. But if you go on YouTube and watch the clips of Godzilla from the movie, it's 8 minutes. So he's in the film for between 8 to 11 minutes, which is a bit of a disappointment. But apparently the reason for that is, and this is completely true, is Godzilla was a bit too busy with other projects, which is why he isn't in the film a lot, because he's a busy guy.
He is. I mean, as we've already discussed, he was doing Deadpool, Captain America: Civil War. He was in Tron Legacy. I mean, I agree. This absolutely makes all the sense in the world that he's a busy guy. I did actually think that, and we'll come back to your out-of-pocket takes, but I'm glad you reminded me of that. For a film called Godzilla, he's not really in it.
And do you know what the problem is? Anytime he is in it, it's too dark to see.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't. And it wasn't. I thought the CGI was decent in the movie, right? I do think at this point, CGI is coming into its own. It's properly working. And so you can't see the join and all of those kinds of things. But I didn't particularly like the design of Godzilla. And I was going to ask you a question about whether or not that design is faithful to how you would expect Godzilla to look.
Yeah, I think the problem is, though, is that I'd understood the 1998 one. Was it 98?
Yeah.
Yeah. And sort of, I think he's now referred to as Godzillasaurus. That could be completely wrong. But he's more of a dinosaur in that film, whereas in this one it is just a bit more faithful to the 1954 version. But apparently the Japanese audience weren't happy with it, and they called him the Fat Godzilla.
Well,
which
gonna
then
ask
had its
that.
Own bit of backlash, yeah.
It did look like Godzilla had quite a lot of pies prior to shooting the movie. It was like what William Shatner became by Star Trek VI.
But I think as well as that's because he's partly based off a bear as well, so the size and shape of it is a bit bear-like. But I mean, he does a bit of exercise. He runs on the treadmill a bit, and then by the new one, he's a lot slimmer. Apparently, the film has 960 visual effects shots, but Godzilla, the 3D model, made up a lot of polygons and appears in 327 shots. But apparently, if they'd rendered the graphics on a single computer, it would have taken 450 years to render, which I just thought was quite an interesting bit of trivia, because it could have been 450 years in the making.
Wow, yeah, like Jurassic Park. I know that was 65 million years in the making. So similar length of time. I found out something that I didn't know. So there had been an attempt to reboot the Godzilla franchise in 1994. Okay, and this is before the 1998 movie, obviously. And so two kind of jobbing screenwriters called Terry Rossio and Ted Elliott put together a script for a Godzilla movie that got stuck in development hell in Hollywood and was never made. Okay, but their script includes the following pieces of action or plot. I am reading this, so I do apologize to the listeners because a lot to remember. So this is from the Terry Rossio and Ted Elliott script for a 1994 American version, which never got made. This was the major plot points of their movie. So one, there's an opening segment set in the past during which one of the main characters' parents gets killed. Godzilla travels to San Francisco and destroys the Golden Gate Bridge. Ancient enemies are reawakened. Godzilla battles a flying monster, which he is hunting to kill. Godzilla blows his atomic breath into the enemy monster, decapitating it. And in the end, Godzilla returns to the sea.
So they just made that film then?
I couldn't possibly comment on whether or not they just made that film.
Yeah.
But it did feel
a bit
too much of a coincidence that this script that had never been used ended up, being used.
Creating a franchise of its own as well.
So I just interesting little bits of trivia there. I thought that was... And I thought, you know, when you look at trivia of a movie, I thought that was a pretty interesting one. Question? How many Academy Awards was Godzilla nominated for?
All of them.
It was nominated for all of them, and it became the world record holder for most Academy Award wins in a single Academy Award season, with 12, just narrowly beating Gone with the Wind, Titanic, and Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. None of that's true.
I was convinced.
No, it was nominated for no Oscars. None.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it did win a couple of things. It was nominated for Best Science Fiction Film, Best Music by, and this is all in the Saturn Awards. The Japanese Academy nominated it for Best Foreign Film. It was nominated for a Teen Choice Award and so on. It won the award for Best Trailer at the Golden Trailer Awards.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was...
That's interesting.
Because I'd like to go...
Clever.
Maybe I should just watch the trailer.
But I mentioned in the last episode that the trailer freaked me out in the cinema.
Yeah. I don't remember.
It would always make me terrified.
I don't remember the trailer at all, but I can create a scenario in my head where you and I have gone to the movies to see a movie, and this trailer comes on, and obviously we decide we're going to go and watch Godzilla, because why not? And at no point did I ever know that that kind of thing absolutely terrified you. You kept that very well hidden.
Thanks, I tried. But I think it's interesting, because when the Cloverfield trailer came on, I was all for it. many years ago.
Yeah, interesting.
That was a mistake.
We should probably say more about Godzilla, and I'm sure you have more things to say about it, so fire away.
I really like some of the little hidden references in this film. Not major ones, but when they go back to the house in Japan, there's a terrarium that has... It looks like the label's been scratched off a bit, but it says Mothra, which is of course another character in the Godzilla canon, and shows up in the sequel actually. But there's like even there's a helicopter at one point which has Edwards on it, and I think that is probably to do with Gareth Edwards directing it, or I like to think that it is. But I thought it was quite clever. Going back to Gareth Edwards, actually, I do think he was a really good director of choice for this film, and I think it is very visual because of it, and I like that it was a bit more artistic than just monsters fighting each other.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought the direction was good, solid, really good color palette, really nicely done. Big action scenes. Some of the this is a really dull thing to say, but some of the aerial shots I thought were amazing. You know, helicopters flying over the horizon and things like that. I thought they were really, really nicely photographed and looked great. And I think you're probably right. He is a good choice. I do really enjoy it when they give these directors who have kind of cut their teeth on independent projects or low budget projects or really well-received, critically acclaimed movies, and they then give them the budget to go away and express themselves. And there's a couple of really good examples. I think Gareth Edwards in this is a good one. Two obvious ones would be Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings, brings a real filmmaker's touch to it. And I always enjoyed Taika Waititi's Thor movies as well, because I thought he brought something to those as well that was kind of found in his movies. You don't really like those movies though, do you? You're not a big fan of those ones.
No, I do. It's just I'm not a big fan of his take on the fourth film. It's not very good at all.
Yeah, different podcast.
Controversial,
but different. But you know what I mean. Like somebody who like Gareth Edwards has made a really successful indie movie in monsters, and is then sort of courted by Hollywood and given a massive budget, and he goes away and makes, I think, a decent visual movie. But it's. I'm going to say one more negative thing about it, if you don't mind. It's joyless. There's no humour. There's absolutely no joy in that movie whatsoever, unless I've missed something.
No, I think in sort of the world of Marvel movies where it is sort of this action-packed and this dark, the humour doesn't work. So I didn't notice that there wasn't any humour. But if you think about it, maybe there should have been, but sometimes it can come on a bit too much.
Yeah, and you're right, because, like, you know, you go from one extreme to the other, and Thor's a good example. Kenneth Branagh's Thor, which is very Shakespearean, all the way to Thor, Love and Thunder, whatever it's called, which is silly. Maybe you can go too far with that. But I did think it was a kind of joyless movie. Even Godzilla, which I think at its heart, a really good Godzilla movie, is that Godzilla is essentially... there's some heart there. There's a personality. There's some meaning in the monster's brain. Even Godzilla, he's not in it enough to come off very well. He kind of comes in, saves the day, does the atomic breath thing, and off he pops for his tea. Anything else you want to say about Godzilla?
I could probably go on for quite a while, so I think it's probably best that we round it up now.
Okay. Who went first on scores last week? We should remind the listener what scores we gave. I gave it 3 out of 10, and you gave it...
I gave it a 4 out of 10.
Okay. And I think I went first last week, but I wouldn't swear to that.
I want to say that you did, yeah.
It doesn't matter. Would you like to go first this time?
Yeah, I'll go first. I hadn't really come up with a score before we sat down and started talking about this. And I kind of had one in my head going, but I wanted to come up with the score this time as I went for it, as we had the conversation and discussed it. So I think it has changed from my initial thought of it. But I do like this film. Since the past of being too scared to see it, but still seeing it anyway, I think it's more of an enjoyable experience for me now. And I think this is a very good stepping stone to the rest of the MonsterVerse films that started it off. So I do enjoy this one, in hindsight, let's say. I like the action, even though you can't really see much of it, and it's not on for very long. I like the characters enough that they're interested in, and the lack thereof of Godzilla makes up for it in a way, I would say. It's a great director. I'll always enjoy a good Gareth Edwards film. So I'm actually going to give this a 6 out of 10, which isn't that much of a leap, but it's because I know other films that I prefer to it, but it is better than my initial reaction to it as well.
I think that's fair. I mean, if you think that a 10 is an excellent, amazing movie, best movie ever, and a 1 is dreadful, therefore 5 is a good movie, in inverted commas, to give it a 6 means it's marginally better than good.
I haven't put it in the middle, but it's better than being average, I would say, yeah.
Well, I gave it 3 because my memory score was based on the fact that it was a film that we would otherwise just have gone and watched, and I don't remember why. We'd probably seen a trailer and gone and watched it. And as I said at the time, it has therefore been 10 years since I've seen it, so it was like watching a new movie for me. And I gave it 3 for that reason. But I have to tell you, I mean, I didn't enjoy it a bit. I couldn't find anything. I agree with you about Gareth Edwards directing. I thought some of the photography, some of the effects and everything was just great. And I thought actually the CGI was as good as it gets for that particular time period. And but I didn't like the characters. I thought they were cliched. I thought the use of tsunamis in Japan was inappropriate. Bryan Cranston dies too early. The best actress in it disappears halfway through the movie for no reason whatsoever. I've just discovered they kill her off in the next one.
Spoilers.
One of my favorite movie composers wrote a score that I didn't find particularly memorable. So I'm just going to go down to a 2. I'm going to just drop it down to a 2 because I don't think it's the worst thing I've ever seen. But I have to say I didn't enjoy it. It was kind of a parallel. When we watched Star Trek last time, I sat and watched it in one sitting, 2.5 hours, really enjoyed it. And maybe that's because that's in my wheelhouse. This one I had to sort of break into chunks and I just couldn't get into it. Maybe that didn't help it either. Anyway, end of a long rant. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 10. To give it a total benefit of hindsight score, rewatch score of 8, and therefore a 4 out of 10.
That's all right. I can accept that in a way.
I think it's a bit harsh. I think I've been a bit harsh with the 2. I could have stuck to a 3, but I didn't enjoy it. And I also think maybe there's one last thing to add to that. Maybe add in 10 years of age and then watching it at my age means maybe it's not really a movie for me anymore. I don't know if I should admit that, but that's another thing that I thought. And stop calling movie characters Ford. Nobody's called Ford in real life. Just call him Dave. Everybody knows a Dave.
Yeah. I think that would majorly improve the movie if he was just called Dave or Bob.
And therefore, your one-word review of Godzilla.
My one word for this is a bit cliche, but I'm going to go with giant.
Good. I like that. I can see why you've done that.
Is that not terrible, though?
That's fine. I like it. It's good. My one-word review for Godzilla is shouty. I did feel like it was shouting at me quite a lot. So I'm going to go with shouty. There you go. That's my one-word review. If you disagree with us, of course, you can get in touch through the interweb. Our email is thebenefitoffindsightpodcast@gmail.com. If you think Godzilla is a masterpiece, do get in touch and let us know. If you think that we've been far too generous, get in touch and let us know. But yeah, Godzilla. The one thing that does have meaning for Godzilla is the fact that it was really the last thing that we went and watched at the movies together as father and son. Obviously, we've done things together since then, obviously. But yeah, it does have a little warm place in my heart for that reason. It's just such a shame that it wasn't didn't finish in a different way.
Yeah. If we hadn't gone to see this, it would have been Amazing Spider-Man 2, though. So you win some, you lose some, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Win some, you lose some. regular listeners will know that we now select the film that we're going to go and rewatch. And two or three episodes ago, we introduced a different way of doing this, which was we haven't discussed it. So we have a list of movies. On that list of movies, Sam will choose one for me this week, or for both of us rather. But last time I chose for Sam, and I chose Godzilla. And so I have no idea what movie Sam's got in mind for us to go and re-watch. So it will be episode 11, which is, you know, big deal. Sam, which film will we be re-watching this week?
After what you've said about Godzilla, I really hope you don't hate me for this.
Let's do it. Go on.
Funny enough, this isn't on our list.
Oh.
And I don't know why that is.
Interesting.
Because it should be. We always say we're going to do a big film when it's a big character, but this time around, we're still big, but not quite as big as Godzilla, and we are 7 years before Godzilla, and that is Michael Bay's 2007 Transformers.
Oh, that's good. I can't believe we missed that off the list.
See, I'm worried though, because you've just called Godzilla shouty, and then we're going to watch a Michael Bay film.
I have an actual memory of this movie at the cinema, and I don't know whether I should share it here. I think I probably should share it here, and then we can come back to it. I grew up with Transformers in the 1980s as a cartoon, okay?
That's right, yeah.
And the toys and things. And was I a massive fan? I was not. But of course I was aware of it, right? And then you and I went to see the movie in 2007. And there's a moment where I think it's Optimus Prime appears and transforms from the big truck into Optimus Prime, or vice versa. And it's kind of photoreal special effects. And it was one of those moments in the movies where I can't really describe it. It was better than just being excited. I was almost moved by what I had seen, that, you know, what had been this kind of terrible 1980s cartoon was now this photoreal, extraordinary thing on a giant screen in front of me. I found it incredibly overwhelming. And I'll never forget that moment, because whatever I think of the movie, and we can come back to that, there was just this moment where I just thought, that's just the coolest thing I've ever seen. And so, yeah, I remember that moment very well. I also remember being quite looking forward to this movie, and one that you were looking forward to seeing as well.
See, that's not how I remember it. I remember it as being something that a friend talked about at school, and I wasn't really that interested, but we went anyway.
So the memory is a difficult thing, isn't it? Because it's possible that I was, for 10 years of your life, I was simply dragging you to the movies. And here we are.
I don't know about
here
that.
Here we are 10 years later doing a podcast in which we're sort of creating this impression that we had this thing. And actually you're just like, another big stupid movie. I want to stay at home and watch the movies of, I don't know, Werner Herzog.
Could you imagine?
and the old man's dragging me to see the next Michael Bay thing, honestly, for heaven's sake. No, I remember you being excited. I remember you being, maybe excited is the wrong word, but it,
I think we saw this more than once.
Yeah, it was definitely a merchandising thing for you.
It might have been that I was excited for another time around for seeing this, but I don't know, I don't remember.
It was definitely a merchandising movie for you as well. And a lot of them were. You did like the old toy merchandise, but movie merchandise. But this was definitely one where Bumblebee in particular, you wanted everything, basically had to be Bumblebee. And you're still into your movie collectibles, right?
I am, yeah. Probably shouldn't admit it, but yeah.
Do you have a Godzilla?
I have multiple Godzilla.
Bless you for that. Okay, I'm excited for Transformers. I'm really excited. So do you want to give us your memory score for Transformers?
Yeah. Now, this is another interesting one, because I watched 2007 Transformers last year and couldn't get into it. So it's going to be fun. From memory, though, I think my memory score of Transformers is going to be a 7, because I did really enjoy it. Probably another movie where I paid more attention to the action and what was going on than the story. So I think that's why it's probably a solid 7, just because it's the action that I remember more than anything else, really. But I have always as a kid, I'd always returned to it and went back to it, especially with the sequels and things like that. And I did always enjoy it as a kid. So I'm interested to see what I actually think and my actual thoughts of it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited for it. I'm gonna be very brief and go with you. I'm gonna give it a 7 out of 10 because I do remember thinking that it was one of those moments in cinema history, and maybe I'm overstating this a bit, but one of those moments in cinema history where the technology had enabled them to do something that they couldn't do before. And I think that's why I found it so overwhelming. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. And possibly could go down, I don't know. But there we are. Which gives it an overall score, because we aggregate and average these out, of 7. So there you go.
Nice.
There are probably people screaming into their device now, because I've just given Godzilla 2 and Michael Bay's Transformers 7. But, you know, we're not...
It's just the way these things are.
This is an incredibly subjective podcast, right? We're not sitting down and judging the movies objectively. It's just subjective and how we feel about them. So anything else you want to add to this episode, Sam, before we close?
No, I'm pretty happy with what we've discussed, I think, today, yeah.
Yep, okay, good. Did you know that today is the World Day of Love?
I didn't know that, actually. That's interesting.
And it's also a day in which Russia celebrates the fact that it is Russia, called Russian Day.
Wow, okay.
So Americans are celebrating love. Russia is celebrating itself. I think that makes the world perfectly normal, don't you?
Yeah, if that's what normal means, yeah.
Yeah. Well, whatever makes you happy. In America, it's love. In Russia, it's themselves. Which is ironic, because from Russia... with love.
That is ironic, actually, yeah.
Good way to end. Good night from me.
And good night from me.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Have you stopped recording? Oh.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?